coming this morning. We're delighted by your presence, and we especially want to acknowledge the presence of those who are visiting with us, and we are really happy that you are here. In our auditorium class, we have been looking at the epistles of John. We've been looking at the error that John was having to address in the first century. It was an error that really denied the full incarnation of deity in the person of Jesus. That is, it was an error that said that Jesus really was not a real human being. He was deity, but deity had not really become a flesh and blood human being like us. And as a result of that, John was having to address that error. Now, that error is not really prevalent in our day and time now. Not many people who you're going to meet on the street who would identify themselves as a docetic, as someone that denied that Jesus was a real human being, that he was just some kind of apparition. But I do believe that there is a form of that error that still survives today. I think it not only survives, I think it thrives. It thrives among the very people sometimes whom you would think would be least likely to hold any kind of a view that would deny the humanity of Jesus, like the Bible says. I think what you see is a form of that docetic view among a lot of Christians, among us. I don't mean by that I think there are Christians who open up their Bibles and deny that Jesus was a flesh and blood human being, who say that he was just some kind of an apparition. No, I'm not suggesting that. But I do believe that we as Christians today sometimes have a hard time really accepting the fact that Jesus was a real human being. A real human being like us. And I think sometimes what we may do in our day is kind of water down the humanity of Jesus. In fact, so emphasize his deity that maybe we water down in our minds, at least in a practical way, the full humanity of Jesus. To the point where we may think, Jesus really doesn't understand what I go through. He doesn't really understand what I experience in my life, what I have to undergo in my life. I think that's a form of neo-docetism, if you want to give it a technical name. But I think it's something real. I think it really is a failure to recognize and to appreciate and to really believe what the Bible is telling us, that Jesus was absolutely God, but was also, at the same time, a real human being just like us, with the same emotions and the same physicality and the same temptations and the same pressures and the same travails and all those kinds of things. I think sometimes we have a hard time really accepting. And so I want to talk with you a little bit this morning about that. There's a lot of people who would say this: Jesus really just doesn't know how hard it is to keep from sinning. Jesus just really doesn't understand how difficult it is for me to constantly be fighting temptation. You ever felt that way? After all, Jesus was perfect. Jesus was sinless. And so Jesus just really can't appreciate and understand how difficult it is for us to deal with temptations all the time, and some temptations we struggle with over and over and over again. Well, I want to say to you that temptation is real, and it is also real hard to deal with. We are beings who are encapsulated in this body of flesh with all of its passions, all of its desires, all of its lusts. Indeed, as John said, we do have the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and this vain pride of life. And that's what we have to deal with as human beings. And it is tough. It is difficult. In fact, the Apostle Paul, I think, words so well this struggle that we go through as human beings trying to deal with temptation on a daily basis. In Romans chapter 7 and verse 15, where Paul said, "For what I am doing, I do not understand, for I am not practicing what I would like to do, but I am doing the very thing I hate." Does that kind of sum up your struggle with temptation? In your mind, you know what you want to do. You want to do the right thing, and yet you wind up doing the very thing that you hate doing. And that is just a cycle that repeats itself over and over and over again. Paul goes on to say in verse 23 of the same chapter, Romans 7, "But I see," or rather verse 22, "for I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, but I see a different law in the members of my body waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin which is in my members." There's this struggle that we're going through. At least a struggle that we're going through if we're trying to live a godly life. Now, some people may just give themselves over to sin so much that even in their mind they willingly are doing these things that are wrong. But a person who is in their mind wanting to do what is right and is struggling against these temptations of the flesh, it is a war. It's a battle. And it's a tough one. It's absolutely tough. And I think a lot of times we may have the idea that perfect, sinless Jesus just doesn't really understand. I know we think that sometimes about God. Well, he's never been in the position that I'm in. And yet God's response is, "But I sent my son into the world, who put on flesh, who lowered himself to become a man." And yet I think that's really where there's a part of us sometimes that just doesn't really accept the idea that Jesus was a human being like us. That he really was tempted with this same struggle like we are. We just don't quite buy that. And I think really that problem that I'm talking about in this regard is something that you see with a lot of us as we become so focused upon our own selves and our own struggle with temptation. There's a lot of times where we don't think that anybody else really understands what we're going through. You ever talk to some of these young people and made the observation that years ago, you used to be in school just like they are right now, and you used to be in high school or middle school just like they are right now, and do you get the reaction from them on their face when you make that statement to them? They just kind of have that look at you like, "What? You weren't my age. You didn't really go to school the way I am." It's as if you just told them that the moon's made out of cheese or something. I mean, they just look at you like that's just a meaningless statement, an absurd statement. They have a hard time relating to the fact that you can relate, you say, with what they go through with peer pressure and with their friends and with struggling with their grades and with their parents and all that kind of thing. They just really have a hard time buying that you really understand what it's like for them. And I think that's just kind of a problem in general that we tend to have, that we just somehow think other people just really can't relate to what I'm going through, that somehow I'm in some unique position. We've had several classes for the men over the years here at the Valrico congregation. We've tried to look at, in these men's classes, at some special problems that men go through, and we've had the entire gamut age-wise of men from high school and college age all the way up to those who are very elderly. And without exception, every time we have a class like that, and we're talking about various temptations of the flesh and all these kinds of things, without exception, those young men leave that class astounded that those older men, they go through the same kind of temptations, sexual temptations, problems in this area and that, the same kind of temptations and struggles that I go through. They're shocked by that. And they're shocked by the fact that those men, even in advanced years, continue to struggle with those same issues, just like those young men do. So I think there's just sort of this general tendency for us maybe to have the idea that other people just can't relate to the temptations that I'm going through. And then we apply that especially to Jesus. Let me suggest, if you will, to look at what the Hebrew writer has to say in Hebrews chapter 2, where he talks about this whole concept about Jesus as our high priest and the significance of Jesus in that role and the necessity for Jesus to be a human being to fulfill that role. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 17 and 18, the Hebrew writer says, "Therefore, he," Jesus, "had to be made like his brethren in all things, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For since he himself was tempted in that which he has suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted." In the context, the point the Hebrew writer is making is not just that Jesus was a flesh and blood human being, but why he had to be that flesh and blood human being. Why God had to become this human being. He says, in order for him to be a faithful and capable high priest, he had to be just like us. Experience what we go through, just like us. In fact, the whole concept here is that if Jesus were not a human being like us, did not understand those struggles with the flesh, didn't understand all of those difficulties that we as human beings have to go through as we strive to live right in this sin-filled world, if Jesus did not really understand all of that, the Hebrew writer says he couldn't be our high priest. He goes on to say over in chapter 4, verses 15 and 16, "For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as are we, yet without sin. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." You see, what we don't realize is that when we somehow minimize the humanity of Jesus and say, well, he was perfect, he never sinned, so therefore it must have been easier for him. And that's our logic. That's how we reason. When we say that kind of thing, when we think that kind of thing, what we are doing unwittingly is just pulling out the rug and undermining everything about Jesus' ability to be our high priest. In fact, the point he's making in verse 16 about why we can draw near the throne of God to receive grace and help in time of need, the reason why we can draw near boldly is because Jesus understands what a struggle it is. Now, he didn't give in to the temptation, but may I suggest to you, the fact that he did not give in to the temptation does not argue that the temptation for him wasn't as strong as it is with us. No, what it really should point out to us is Jesus spent a little more time in prayer with God to help defeat temptation than perhaps we do. it maybe indicates to us, or should indicate to us, that Jesus put a little more faith in God and His promises than maybe what we do. What we need to appreciate is that Jesus, when He was faced with His trials and faced with His temptations, He was willing to talk to God about that in prayer. He was willing to cast all of His anxiety upon the Father. He was willing to put all of His faith and trust in the Father and the Father's will, even at times when He didn't understand why it had to be this way or that way. And the problem is that that's where we tend to fall short. Jesus, not being guilty of sin, is not an indication that His temptations were less than ours. It's simply an indication of He was more willing to do what God wanted done than you and I are. But He knows what it's like. He knows how tough it is. He knows how difficult it is, and that's the reason why, as the Hebrew writer says, when we do sin, we can approach His throne of grace with confidence, knowing that the one whom we're appealing to is someone who didn't make our mistake, but who sure understands how easy it is to slip and make that mistake. Yeah, Jesus understands. Somebody says, well, Jesus just doesn't understand my grief. There's a lot of grief and sadness in this world. A lot of people here in this audience who have lost loved ones, still grieving and mourning over the loss of loved ones. Parents that have been lost. Spouses that have been lost. Children who are not doing right. Children who they've had to bury. I have not lost a child to death, but I watched my parents as they grieved and mourned over my sister. I will never forget the horror of that day when my father called and with wailing said to me that my sister had suddenly had a heart attack. And I will never forget when I rushed over to my dad's house and I pulled up to the driveway and he came out of the house to meet me just sobbing, "She's dead, she's dead." And I will never forget the grief and the agony of having to sit there with my father for a couple hours waiting for my mother to come home from an event at the Performing Arts Center that she'd gone to with some of the other ladies, to then tell her as soon as she got home that her daughter Donna was dead. I mean, there's just grief in this world that just can't be depicted in movies. It can't be described. And so maybe sometimes we're tempted to think, Jesus doesn't understand what I'm going through. Jesus just doesn't understand. Again, we may think nobody understands. Nobody can really appreciate it. And then we also apply that to Jesus, the Son of God. He doesn't really understand. I want you to think with me, if you will, at John chapter 11. In John chapter 11, verse 30, Jesus was called to the village of Bethany where Lazarus, his good friend, had just died a few days earlier. Now, Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha met him. Then the Jews who were with her in the house and consoling her, when they saw that Mary got up quickly and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Therefore, when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him and fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled and said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews were saying, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man also from dying?" So Jesus, again, being deeply moved within, came to the tomb. Somebody says Jesus doesn't understand what it's like to experience that kind of grief and sorrow. And of course, people raise the question here, well, why is Jesus weeping? Why is Jesus so moved with emotion here? The way the others were and the way that we would be. Why is he moved with such emotion? Doesn't he know that he's going to resurrect Lazarus? And of course the answer is, well, yes. And so I have people many times ask the question, well, why is Jesus weeping then? Why is he in such sorrow when he knows that in just a little bit he's going to resurrect Lazarus and there will be great rejoicing? Well, some suggest it's because he was so upset about their lack of faith and he's weeping over that. Some suggest he's weeping and filled with emotion just at the fact that he sees their sorrow. And he so empathizes with their sorrow, even though he knows that he's pretty soon going to turn their sorrow into joy. Some have suggested that he's weeping because Lazarus, his friend, even though he's going to be resurrected, he had to go through that illness and go through that travail that finally took his life. I don't know why it is that Jesus, knowing that he was going to resurrect him, why he still was filled with such sorrow and mourning. But I do know this. It indicates to me just how amazingly sensitive and emotional he was. Because especially when he could see so clearly about the joy that they were all going to see, he still is himself filled with such emotion. People say Jesus can't relate to the grief I'm going through. The Son of God became a human being so he could relate to what we go through. And yes, he does understand that emotion. Yes, he does understand that travail. He understands that. He understands that. Someone says, well, Jesus just doesn't really understand, though, how tough life can be. He was the Son of God. He's able to have God talk to him all the time. He's able to just know that he's the Son of God. And so it's just somehow different for him. He just doesn't really understand how tough life can be. And I'll tell you what, life can be tough. It is tough. Moses said in Psalm 90, said the pride of life is labor and toil. In fact, Jacob, in his statement to Pharaoh when he first met Pharaoh asked him how long he'd been living on this earth. He said, "My years have been few and unpleasant." And indeed, that's the way that we all feel, at least at some point and at various points in our life. The days of our life are absolutely filled with travail. They're unpleasant. They're filled with toil and struggle. And sometimes we may think, well, Jesus just doesn't really understand what that's like. Somehow it was different for him. I want you to think about the words of
Isaiah 53. Before we took the Lord's Supper this morning, Ed read for us that marvelous prophetic psalm, Psalm 22, that talked about the sorrows of Jesus on his cross. Isaiah 53 is another passage that does that very thing. Isaiah 53, verses 3 and 4, "He was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And like one from whom men hide their face, he was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted." Did Jesus really not understand what this earthly life can be like? You know, the Gospels teach us that people, the crowds, they flocked to Jesus wherever he went. And the reason why they flocked to him, somewhat, yeah, to listen to what he had to teach, but mainly they flocked to him because of all their ailments and their struggles and their illnesses, and they wanted Jesus to help. And that's what he was constantly dealing with. Constantly. Constantly dealing with people who were in pain and agony because of this affliction. Constantly dealing with people who were concerned because it was their loved one, their child, who was afflicted and struggling. On a daily basis, Jesus is confronted with those people and all of their struggles and all of their trials. You mean Jesus doesn't understand what the human condition is? Yeah, he understands. In fact, that's the reason why in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 17, Matthew applies these verses right here to Jesus as he would heal people of their illnesses. Yes, he did bear their sorrows and their griefs. He understands what people go through. And then you think about the ultimate way in which Jesus bore our sorrows on the cross. The agony that Jesus went through as they drove nails through his hands and his feet. The agony that Jesus went through as even his own followers rejected him. All of that Jesus went through, yes, Jesus is certainly a man acquainted with our sorrows and our griefs. And don't you ever think any differently. He understands. Because he has experiential knowledge of those things. Yes, he does. And may I suggest to us that when we are going through times where we are so oppressed by our problems and our afflictions that we're tempted to think that the Lord whom we serve just really doesn't understand what I have to go through, when we're tempted to think like that, may I suggest that the real problem is not with his lack of understanding, it's with our lack of understanding. We don't really grasp the fact of how difficult it was for him to go through what he went through. I don't know too many of us that have had to be crucified to a cross. Do you? The fact of the matter is, Jesus did experience what we experience. He did go through what we go through. The fact of the matter is, he went through even more. He understands. He understands. And it is that person who understands and can truly empathize with how difficult our struggle is in this life, he is the one who wears the crown and who reaches out his hand to you and says, "I want you to be one of my. I understand how tough it can be. I've walked that road myself.
come take my hand and come join me. That's who our King is. I wonder if there's someone this morning who needs to respond to Him. Won't you take hold of His hand? Won't you serve this King, this marvelous King, who truly understands what you go through and who died so that you could be one of His own? Won't you come together? We stand and sing this song of encouragement.